Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled My Perfect Teacher by Lama Tom Broadwater. Devotion is a needed quality in any student of Tibetan Buddhism. But what happens if we find faults in our teachers? How is devotion shown in those situations? Lama Tom explores these topics and answers questions from the Sangha. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
So, good morning. Cold out there today. When I got up this morning, it was 18 degrees. I haven't seen that in a while. Thank you for being here today, and welcome. My name is Lama Tom Broadwater, and I have the privilege of being able to teach Dharma here. And again, thank you for being here. As is our custom, we begin by taking refuge. And basically what we're doing is we're setting our motivation and our intention for the next few moments. We come hopefully with an open heart, a big heart, a loving heart, loving towards all beings. That's essentially what we're doing when we're taking refuge. So you have the little refuge prayer. And we'll say it in English three times. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and all good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Again, I welcome you all. There's some new faces that I have never seen before. And there are some old faces I have not seen in a long time. Welcome, Adam. Glad to see you. And all the new folks that I have yet to meet, welcome. So today, the topic that I took up was the topic of teachers and the function of teachers. I originally had the topic, my perfect teacher. What happens if my teacher is not perfect? When I put that out as a title for my topic, Lama Adam, who basically does our advertising, you might say, he said, "Well, that's too long of a title. You can't use that." So I wound up just saying my perfect teacher. But having to revise that sort of title, it gave me the opportunity to put teacher within a broader context, the broader context of our tradition, our practices, and more particularly, devotion. But I will tell you how to deal with the imperfections of teachers. People like myself. I will talk about that. This topic really fits in very well with what Lama Cathy was talking about last week. And it was basically, and if you haven't listened to it, I really recommend you go to our website or go to the YouTube to pick it up and listen to it, because it was very good. It's basically about the trajectory or the progressive practices we do within our Kagyu lineage. It was a great talk. I think you're going to continue on that, right, Aunt Kathy? So I'm going to do a little bit of a review of what she talked about last week. Basically, she emphasized the aspects of prayer, meditation, compassion, devotion, and Mahamudra as a part of Kagyu practice. Am I saying that right, Lama Kathy? Okay. Her teacher and guru was Kempo Carter Rinpoche. And she said that Kempo Carter Rinpoche told her that when you begin practice, when she was to begin practice, begin with prayer. And so he told her to pray to the Buddha. Now, prayer in Buddhist practice is different than prayer in Christians and even Muslim religions. It's different because, in short, in Buddhist prayer, we're not praying to someone utterly different from ourselves. And we're not asking them to give us something. In terms of Buddhist prayer, it's opening our hearts up to the inspiration of the Buddha, who was once just like us. That's the idea. And that inspiration can have a very calming effect on our troubled minds. And let's admit it, most of us come to Buddhism with troubled minds. So prayer can help us. It gives us inspiration. And that's what Kempo Carter Rinpoche told Lama Kathy to do. Praying and taking refuge in the Buddha helps us to begin our spiritual journey. As many of you know, here at Columbus KTC, we do introductory classes. And those broadly cover the topics that we need to understand before we even begin to practice. And they are, however, introductory, and they are not exhaustive. At the same time that we're taught those different subjects, we're also asked to begin to meditate. So we're encouraged to do that. Our lineage emphasizes the need to practice. That's why we're called the practice lineage. Practice makes sense in this respect. We can read how to play a piano. We can look at a recipe on how to bake a cake. But if we never bake a cake or try to play a piano, it's not going to work. I mean, what good is that? So we're really encouraged to practice meditation, to practice the various practices we have within the lineage. You will frequently find that when a teacher approaches you, one of the first questions they will ask you is, how's practice going? It's not we're being nibby. It's like we want to be helpful and establish with you the importance of that. So throughout your spiritual journey, we emphasize practice and meditation, and to do it on a regular basis. This allows us to train our minds, preparing the ground to actually integrate the teachings into our lives. What good is hearing all this stuff if in no way we're putting it into our own lives? So that's really important. The sequence for how we practice within this lineage will vary according to the student. But one of the great books that we often use with students is A Great Path of Awakening. That's one of the first books we would recommend you review with a teacher. It's a wonderful book because it's going to teach you how to actually, in everyday practice, to put into action compassion and kindness, loving kindness. It's going to teach you that. It's going to teach you compassion meditation. It also has a set of little slogans that you can adopt into your everyday life. It's one of the favorite books of Lama Kathy's, and it was one of the first books that we went over together after I got out of retreat. So we also would recommend for any new student to attend some of the puja practices. They're wonderful. The meditative practices have benefits that will lead, these pujas lead to greater compassion and insight. So I really recommend for the new student to at least try some of these out. There's Medicine Buddha, Tara, and Chinrezig. Those are the three practices we currently do. And so I highly recommend that, give it a try. Even if you have not taken refuge, it's okay. Please go. They are here on Sunday mornings and during the weekdays, and you can look up that schedule. The highest teachings of this lineage are called Mahamudra. The lineage of the Buddha, of course, goes back 2,600 years. The lineage of Mahamudra, which are the sort of at the apex of our lineage, our tradition, have a 1,000-year-old lineage. We've talked about them at different times on Sundays, and I won't go through them right now, but the lineage of Mahamudra is really interesting. The people that are within that, the masters within that lineage, are very diverse, and some of them pretty wild, you might say. So we'll come back to Mahamudra in a little bit. I just wanted to introduce that. If we have the patience to listen, to think about and practice what we're learning, we receive the blessings of practice. We receive the blessings of Dharma. What's that mean? Some people may think that blessings means that we receive some sort of strange power, that we shake all over, or we levitate, or we have this strange feeling. We talked about this in Nundro practice. Everyone wants the strange feeling or whatnot. Well, that's not blessing. That's just an experience. Let's put it this way. At first, you don't know anything about Dharma. You don't even know if it's good. But you think, well, maybe it's okay. Then you think, well, maybe I should give Dharma a try. If I meditate, maybe the Dharma will help. And so through our practice, we develop some faith and confidence in what we're doing. We say, well, maybe the Dharma does help. That is what we mean by blessing, the blessing of Dharma. Doing the practice offers us confidence in it. That's the blessing of practice. Then there's devotion. Now, what's devotion? Dharma is something we need to practice. If in this life we don't consider or concern ourselves solely with worldly things, worldly affairs, but practice Dharma, it will help us. It will bring us peace, and it will make us happy. and it will bring benefits to other beings. But in order for this to happen, we need to have interest in the Dharma. Interest is a part of devotion. In the beginning, you need to be testing out, and testing out with interest. Is this working? Does this work? It's just like this. If you're buying a car, you'd test drive it, wouldn't you? You would probably look it up in Consumer Magazine. How well does it work? Same thing applies to Dharma. You try it out. You see if it works. That's interest. And that's a part of devotion. And it's really not something you ever should lose. Interest. So analyze what's being said by any teacher. Analyze it for yourself. And you come to the conclusion, if you analyze, that this Dharma may be good. And if I practice, that's good. And if I practice even more, it's even better. So gradually we begin to see how potent the Dharma is. Through your interest, your understanding of the Dharma, you grow. So your initial interest is really important. If you don't have interest, you will think all this is pointless. And you'll give up. So once you've established interest, it's important to have respect for what you're practicing and what you're learning. You have to say, this Dharma is just not ordinary stuff. It's not crummy. It's not mediocre. It's important. And it's beneficial to me and to others. It helps me and it helps others. In fact, it's pretty wonderful. When we begin to think this way, with interest and respect, that's called devotion. And it's for this reason. When we practice Dharma, it's important to develop genuine interest and respect. Which is, again, as I say, devotion. The more devotion we have for the Dharma, the easier it will be to actually practice. And through this devotion, we gain understanding of the Dharma. So it's important to find it wherever you can. You should read as much as you can. We have a library full of wonderful Dharma books, and you should read them. Yes, we're the practice lineage, but practice should be intelligent and informed, so use the library. Also, there's, as I've mentioned before, videos. There's Dharma videos, thousands of them out there. Some good, some not so bad. It's okay. Just look at them, discover them. Now, I come to the major part of my talk, which is about teachers. And so the point being is that while we do have to discover things on our own and test it on our own, we do need guides to show us how to travel this unfamiliar path. We do need guides. You and I, if we are going into an unfamiliar territory, we're going to use our GPS probably, right? So it's like that. We need captains of this boat of Dharma. We could do it our own, but that usually winds up in our being sort of painting ourselves into a corner with our own egos. And you see folks like that. Oh yeah, I know all that. I've learned all that all on my own. And it's not does not have the blessing of the lineage, and more likely it is simply what they've made up on their own anyway. So we need teachers, teachers that are authentic. Here at Columbus, we will encounter teachers, lay lamas, kempos, lama monks, yogis, and rinpoches. They're all willing to teach. They're all willing to help. And here at KTC, Lama Kathy has deputized certain people to teach introductory Dharma courses. These folks have been trained, vetted, and supervised by Lama Kathy. And we should respect them all based on their generosity to give them themselves and the fact that they are authorized to teach authentic Dharma. So we respect them. We should. Additionally, Lama Kathy has authorized certain individuals to teach here in the Shrine Room on Sundays. This is a special privilege that she's granted to individuals she's trained, vetted, and authorized to teach in this special place. So we should also show them respect and devotion, again, based upon their generosity. I don't know about other people, but sitting up here in front of a group of people and having the responsibility to give of what you know is a big responsibility. And sometimes, as I was telling Lama Kathy, right before I give a talk, I get this really strange feeling in the pit of my stomach. I suppose it's social anxiety or whatever, but I get this feeling and I'm thinking, God, I've got a big responsibility here. So those people that have come forward and said, I'll do this, they're making a sacrifice. They're doing it out of the generosity and their knowledge of what Dharma can do for them. And so we respect them. Then there are the three lamas that are here, myself, Lama Kathy, and Lama Adam. So why are we called lamas? Well, our teacher, Kempo Karcha Rinpoche, gave us that title. And he authorized our teaching here at Columbus KTD. He's done this similarly to other folks in other places. In the papers authorizing us to teach, he refers to us as Drupe Lamas, Lamas of Retreat. All three of us here at Columbus KTC have completed a three-year retreat. We are lamas of a retreat. Now, I want to be clear as far as I'm concerned. Calling us lamas does not confer on us any unusual qualities, nor is it a recognition of any spiritual attainment. I'm speaking for myself here. They can speak for themselves. In the case of you're calling me Lama, to me that means I'm an authorized servant, a servant of this community, and that's all. Kempo Karcha Rinpoche, in his great kindness, authorized me the privilege of being your servant. That's all. When I was leaving retreat, I was talking to my retreat master, and I have to be honest about it. I said to him, I don't want to be called Lama when I leave retreat. I don't want that. And he looked at me, and this Lama soldier, who's very direct sometimes, he said, Lama Tom, it's not about you. He said, it's not about you. It's about the special empowerments you've received, the special practices you were privileged to have done and that you were introduced to, and this time spent doing them. You're honoring the lineage when you call me Lama. And it's bringing to mind that lineage and that practice. It's not about self-importance. That's why you call folks lama. And of course, there are lamas, and there are lamas. And I'm on the lowest rung of all those, for sure. And I have no need for you to call me lama. And some don't. But if you do, know that you are honoring the practices and the teachings I received and the privilege I had of receiving them. That's all. Lama Yeshe of Wisconsin, many of you know him. He said in a lighthearted way, he said, call me whatever you want, but don't call me late for dinner. So it's like that. When an authentically authorized teacher explains the authentic Dharma, we need devotion. If we have no devotion, you may think, oh, that teacher explains things in a stupid way, or there's no point to that, or, you know. And if you do that, you won't practice. It's for that reason. It's important to have faith and devotion in our teachers. And it's important that the teacher realize the importance of their own work. So it's a two-way street there. It's said that when an authentic teacher is explaining the authentic Dharma, they are like the Buddha. At times, when you look at the teacher, you may see their faults. There is no need for you to pretend that we don't have faults. There's no need for you to do that. First of all, because it's so apparent, but there's no need. Because what is being taught is the Dharma. It's the Dharma that's good. That's what we need to practice. Whether the teacher is good or bad, what we need is the Dharma. If the teacher is saying something worldly or deceptive, we put it aside. We don't have to listen to that. And we don't have to have a blind faith in which we don't sort things out. We need to make sure the Dharma being taught is pure. It may be that the teacher does have a few qualities, but on the other hand, it may be that they have faults. It doesn't matter whether they have qualities or they have faults if what is being taught is the pure Dharma. If they have faults, that's how it is. But if the Dharma taught is authentic, the teacher, whomever they are, have been kind and generous to you. We cannot meet the Buddha. We can only meet human teachers. And we can consider them more kind, actually, than the Buddha. I don't think any of us here have experienced actually seeing the Buddha, right? He passed. All you have is that lineage that goes from student to teacher, student to teacher, down to us. And so it is through us, teachers, that you encounter the Buddha's teaching. It is possible, and in my case, it's for us sure, that you're not going to find a teacher that has 100% good qualities. That is not a problem. We don't always have to have the perfect lama, particularly here in the beginning. We just have to have guides that know a little bit more than we do. That's what you need. Again, the Lama's faults are theirs. And we don't need to imitate them. And we don't necessarily have to follow them throughout our spiritual journey. If we do follow to the ends of the journey, there is a process of discernment. You take your time. Look at them. Do they have the qualities I need to grow? So you do look at that. A discerning process is involved here. And you do examine them very carefully the further along you go on your spiritual journey. That's important. If you find faults such that this spiritual journey somehow gets compromised, you can choose not to follow. That is never a problem. But the reason you follow any teacher is for the Dharma. So, to be really blunt about this, our devotion to a teacher is not mindless adoration, nor is it an abdication of your personal responsibility to yourself. And it is not following another in some sort of personality cult. And as I might say, you don't have to drink the Kool-Aid. Do people get that analogy? Yeah, a long time ago there was a religious group, where the leader basically required his adherents to drink Kool-Aid that basically ended their lives. We don't have to drink the Kool-Aid here. Ultimately, our devotion is to the truth. That's what Dharma is, the truth. Our devotion is rooted in gratitude. A gratitude, however, that's clear, that's grounded, and that's intelligent. In the beginning, we began this talk about Mahamudra, which is the highest level of meditation. Would that be? And it's the highest teachings within our lineage. And it does require extensive preparations. At the very top, at the apex of our spiritual journey, the master, the teacher, the Lama, the qualified master, teacher, and Lama, he's the one or she's the one that will that you have carefully examined. That person will open our heart and offer a powerful glimpse into the nature of our own mind. And when that happens, a wave of gratitude can come over us. It is at that point our devotion, our longing, our interest, our respect for the teacher is most fully realized and affirmed. In those moments, we realize the master, the teacher, the Lama, embodies in his or her being the teachings and ultimate wisdom. Your teacher, in that case, becomes your link to the truth and the embodiment of the nature of your own mind. That's your perfect teacher. In the meantime, you have to deal with people like myself. So We've talked about teacher, and we've talked about it within the nature of our practice. And our practice is, there's a lot of different ways we travel this spiritual journey. But throughout this spiritual journey, we're going to need teachers. And you need to be aware of what they can do for you and what they can't do for you. But it is ultimately your finding your way with the help of those around you. Oh, I ended really early. That's good. So we have lots of, it's funny, I never know how long I'm going to talk. And it just so happened, so we can ask questions. And I assure you, no question is beyond us here. So please feel free to jump up and ask a question.
So as somebody new to practicing Buddhism, I've read books before and I've understood the concept for many years, but have never taken the practice. When is it that I should seek a teacher, and how do I do that?
That's a really good question. And my answer to that would be right now. And at least within the context of KTC, the Combat's KTC, I go to the 8 classes that are available to us as a beginner. Those teachers, as I said before, are authorized to sort of introduce the student to our practice here. Some of the things, because you've read stuff on Buddhism, will be familiar with you. Other things may not be. So I'd start there, take the classes. I'd also say take the class on meditation to learn how we meditate here. It's basically not so much different than other traditions, but there are some little nuances, so I would do that. Lama Kathy, myself, Lama Adam are more than happy to talk to folks anytime. I know that Lama Kathy today, there was someone just came in the door and she said, come on in, sit down, we'll talk about it. So that's another way of doing it. So there's the formal classes and are being available at any time informally.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Lama Tom, for the talk. So my question is about more informally. In our day-to-day lives, we all sometimes have to operate as teachers, just amongst people that we interact with and talk with. Whether it's regarding Dharma or not, sometimes we all have to operate as teachers in our lives. And I'd like to hear your advice for whenever we ourselves have to be teachers to others. How can we bring the Dharma and how we interact with others?
So how do we as practitioners bring the Dharma to others? So I think the most important thing is example. We are not a particularly proselytizing religion. People want to come to us, but they come to us first through our example of love and compassion. One of the things we often do as beginning practitioners, and I consider myself still a beginner, is to want to share Dharma prematurely with an individual who may not at the time want it. So what I really focus on is when I'm with that individual, being very conscious and mindful of the fact that they're, if they ever are inclined to Dharma, my example is really important. So I think that's much more important than trying to give a teaching.
And, you know, in the course of conversation, it may come up. And they may say, well, tell me about that. And you can tell them about it. But I do it in a very relaxed fashion, not particularly formal. So it's sort of like that. What do you think?
I think that's very applicable. I like that you talked about just setting an example. Yeah. I think that's great advice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I recall what the Dalai Lama said when he said, when he was asked, what is my religion? And he said, my religion's love. And so if people can see that's what you're all about, they may develop some interest. So it's like that. Thank you for that question. Good morning. By the way, thank you for all your questions.
I think maybe Westerners maybe bristle against the idea of devotion because they maybe conflate it with blind devotion, and I understand the distinction you're making. But all religious institutions are made up by human beings who are deeply flawed. And sometimes there can be very, very deep flaws and scandals, and you can hear about teachers who do things that you react to as being very serious ethical flaws, I guess I should say. So I understand that the devotion is to the Dharma, but in a very practical way, as a Dharma practitioner, how should we think about responding to those things, if at all?
Thank you for that question. It's great. I'm going to make a distinction between having faults and defects and causing harm. I get up in the morning, I'm sort of grumpy. Not sort of, I'm really grumpy. And my wife knows this. I have this defect. It's probably a chemical thing in my body. I don't know. But I get up grumpy. That's one thing. But if I become abusive because I'm grumpy, because I have that defect, that's an entirely different matter. Remember what the first teaching of the Buddha is. Do no harm. So if someone who is in a position, a teacher, is in a position and thereby harm somebody else, that person should not be followed. Whatever their teaching is, they shouldn't be followed. And if they are harming many people, I think you have a responsibility to tell those many people, this is the harm that's being done. And I want to put this in parentheses. This is what I'm thinking. I'm not saying this is the law here. I'm just saying, it seems to me if someone is harming and they are in a position of power, they should not continue in that position. And that's just the way it should be, I think. That's an excellent question. And, you know, we all come hurting when we come to Dharma. And by that I also mean vulnerable. So a teacher has a very special obligation to recognize that. And I think this center has a very, very big obligation to assure that this place is as safe as it can be for those who come here, because so many come vulnerable. I know myself, 20 years ago, I came here very vulnerable. And when I walked in, I said, for once, I find a place that's safe. I'm at home. I feel at home. So that's really important. Your question is really a good one. We should, at this center, ensure that our teachers are teaching authentic Dharma and they are not harming folks. And if that should ever happen, we do have a process available to us to address that harm. But it's just basic Buddhist teaching, the most basic. Do no harm and do as much good as you can and train your mind. Thank you. Other questions? Other thoughts? Thank you for having the courage to get up. It does take a, you know, it takes a little bit of to get up there in front of the microphones. Thank you.
I've been fairly new here. I was wondering if you could just explain what Dharma is.
Oh, very good. So it has a lot of different meanings. I'm thinking there's like dozens of different meanings to what Dharma is. In relation to this talk, Dharma is the teachings of the Buddha. And so what I was saying before is, even before the teacher, we have devotion to the Dharma. It is what the Buddha taught and what has been carried down to us from previous generations. Dharma is often taught not only in what's in books and in sutras and so forth, but from one teacher to the next. That's another part of Dharma. And so it's all those collected teachings that help us to become better people. I think that's the best way to explain it, particularly for a beginning student.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you for asking the question, John. Well, we'll just end up early. That's good. You can go do some other things. First of all, I want to, again, thank you for being here. And, you know, as a teacher, I'm looking out and I'm seeing your faces and your eyes, and I see in your eyes a sincerity that warms my heart. You came here on a Sunday, cold but beautiful day. You could have been doing other things. So I am truly grateful that you've allowed me to speak today, because quite honestly, as a part of my teaching, I learn a lot. So thank you for coming here today and for the generosity of your time. So how we traditionally end is the dedication of merit. And it's on the flip side of the refuge prayer. And we'll also say that in English. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas, may I follow in their path, completely dedicate all this virtue. So let's just sit for just a moment, quietly, not thinking about the future, what we're going to do when we get out of here, not thinking about what we've done or what we should have done, just relax for just a moment. You deserve to relax for just a moment. Maybe take a nice deep belly breath. Slow your mind down. Relax. Thank you all, and have a great week.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.